Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to be back. So glad to have you back. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week, or even the month, through the lens of original thought. I apologize for such a long hiatus. It wasn't a hiatus, no, because it wasn't planned. Things just kind of worked out that way, folks, and I may get to it. I may not. We'll talk about... we're going to talk about some interesting stuff today. I have an update on the bird whisperer. I don't remember where we left off because it's been such a long time. Been gone for 3 weeks. But I'll give you an update on that. And a Yale professor publicly abandoning Darwinian evolution. A secular professor of computer science from Yale. Yes, indeed, we'll talk about that. But first, we want to start by thanking God for the death of Robert Mugabe. Robert Mugabe, if you graduated high school after about 1980, you might have to go look that up. But go look it up, Robert Mugabe. A socialist, a dictator. Well, let's see what Breitbart has to say. He was born in British-ruled southern Rhodesia. He was a self-confessed Marxist who, oddly enough, was raised in a Catholic mission. Huh, imagine that. You become a Marxist being raised by the Catholic Church. Interesting. Now, he was put in jail by the Rhodesian government for 10 years, which is not what you do with self-proclaimed socialists who want to overthrow the government. They need to be dispatched to the next life. They need to be killed with extreme prejudice. But instead, they locked Mugabe up for 10 years. He eventually led a guerrilla war from neighboring Mozambique. Why am I so interested in this? Well, when I was a little kid and I was first becoming aware of the news, I was always hearing about Rhodesia and Mozambique on the news. And at the time, I didn't know why, because I couldn't quite grasp the whole thing. But now I understand. Mozambique was where the rebels hid out and attacked the Rhodesians until eventually they overthrew the Rhodesian government, declared the Republic of Zimbabwe. And you remember Robert Mugabe's, well, last act of note as a socialist dictator. He evicted white farmers. Well, you know, I don't even want to put it that way. What he did was he evicted successful, prosperous farmers from their farms, took that land, and gave it to other Zimbabweans who had never farmed. And then that led to a famine. That's what socialists do. Oh, and so, yeah, the farmers were white and the Zimbabweans were black, but it wouldn't have mattered if he would have taken the farms away from successful, prosperous black farmers and given it to non-farming white people. The same thing would have happened. It's just that he happened to be black. And so, thank God for the death of Robert Mugabe. Those of you who don't believe in term limits, God believes in term limits, indeed. And God actually enforces term limits on everyone. And term limits finally caught up with Robert Mugabe at the age of 95. 95! Our God is a merciful God, giving many, many, many opportunities. How many thousands of opportunities a day did Robert Mugabe have? All right, let's move on now. We're taking no pleasure in the death. We're taking no pleasure in the death of Robert Mugabe and the fact that he's now roasting in hell. That's different. We're just thanking God that a socialist dictator is dead. So there. Meanwhile, we have an attack on a Saudi oil infrastructure Saturday's attack, yes, according to the Wall Street Journal, they call this the big one. An attack on a critical Saudi oil facility. They say this attack has long-term implications because it was carried out by drones. Yes, Iranian fighters from neighboring Yemen, apparently, launched drones against a critical Saudi refinery. And, well, it was a successful attack. The refinery was burning still as we went to air today. So they say protecting such facilities, even from relatively crude terrorists, may be very difficult going forward. As the terrorists, as the drone technology becomes more sophisticated and cheaper, terrorists are going to start using drones to attack. Well, that's just, that's from the war file. That's about par for the course. Meanwhile, while that's going on, or actually before that went on, did you all hear that Donald Trump had invited the Taliban to come to Camp David? Okay, and I think that may be why the General Milo Mass there at, what's his name? John Bolton? Does anyone else know who General Milo Mass is? Is that something I should explain to the people? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Is that something that our kids just made up, or is it real? Oh, never mind. It's something that our kids made up. Anyway, they made up a character and they drew it, having never seen John Bolton. And then when they saw John Bolton's mug on the TV, they said, hey, that's General Milo Mass. Looks the same as one of my kids' drawings. Anyway, they say he quit because, or was fired, I don't know, because Trump had invited the Taliban to Camp David. And if that's the case, then hat tip to John Bolton for standing up and saying, are you out of your mind? And I frankly, do I need to address this? I'm going to address this. I didn't hear anyone of the so-called conservatives on so-called conservative radio or television complain in any way about the fact that the President of the United States had invited the Taliban to Camp David. I mean, does anyone remember the outrage on the right when Bill Clinton invited terrorist murderer Yasser Arafat to Camp David? Does anyone remember? We were all righteously indignant against Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton for inviting a blood-soaked terrorist into Camp David, for crying out loud. And now we've got Donald Trump inviting the Taliban. I'm surprised the whole State Department didn't resign. I'm surprised the whole intelligence infrastructure didn't resign. It's outrageous. Donald Trump should resign for having even invited the Taliban to negotiate at Camp David. All right. All right. So let me continue here. And here's a story from The Wrap, which is directly accountable to, not accountable. What's the word I'm looking for? This is directly attributable to Donald Trump and his vulgar presidency. That's right, The Wrap is reporting that profanity in public by politicians is on the rise. They point to Beto O'Rourke's comments regarding one of the recent mass shootings. I'm not going to repeat it, but now he's selling. We all know what it is, right? Do we all remember? I know not too many people are paying attention to Beto O'Rourke. But he's a presidential candidate, believe it or not. And he was asked in an interview what he thought about the most recent mass shooting. Now, how do you answer a question like that? Anyway, he said, this is effed up. That's what he said. Right there in the interview, as if he were saying, this is horrible. This is terrible. What a horrible crime. Anyway, he said it just like he was saying that, but instead he said that. Well, now he's selling that on a t-shirt. It says that, and then under it says, end gun violence now. It's like a couple of weeks ago, I'm in a restaurant minding my own business, trying to eat dinner with my family. And a guy sits down in plain view of my children with a shirt that says F cancer. Okay. Do you really need to, is that something that we can put on our body and wear out in public in a restaurant so that kids can see it? Anyway, my extremely attractive audio engineer and I had to restrain ourselves from beating the man in the parking lot. But there it was, right there in front of God and everybody to see. And now our politicians, according to research by GovPredict, the number of swear words used by lawmakers on Twitter jumped after 2016. Then they go through all the 7 dirty words and they give us a word count on how many and which ones. So this study was done by a cognitive science professor out at UC San Diego. And he says the increase in, well, vulgar and profane language used by politicians in public is a natural byproduct of how language norms evolve over time. And he's absolutely right. Yes, language norms. As higher and higher profile politicians use more and more vulgar language in public, the whole culture becomes more and more vulgar and coarse and profane. And Donald Trump is a vulgar, coarse, and profane person. Not unlike John McCain, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and who am I missing? Oh, Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton. Now, they weren't quite as public about it as is Donald Trump, but it's just the natural course of things. President Trump, according to the article, President Trump's inclination toward profane language has been critical in changing what is allowable in political discourse. Yeah, indeed. Indeed, just like Bill Clinton normalized fornication, Donald Trump is further normalizing just being plain old profane and vulgar and kind of like Gavin Newsom. Although I've never heard Gavin Newsom swear in public. I never have seen him swear in public. What was the line about Gavin Newsom the other night? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. You said something about Gavin Newsom, that he was the Ken doll of politics. He's obviously elected as the governor of California just because of how he looks. That's all. There could be no other reason, because he's a vacuous, empty suit. Now, he's a liar and a thief and a child killer and a homosexualist and all of that. But as far as actually having any political talent or skill or being an inspirational figure, he has none of that. And that is why he contributes to reason number 1,209, to get or keep your children out of the government schools, because Gavin Newsom has signed a bill. Oh, no, he has signed a law, I'm sorry, that makes it illegal in California schools to suspend disruptive students. That's right. It prohibits willful defiance suspensions. Now, we talked about this a few weeks ago when this was being debated in the legislature there in California. And I've already explained what willful defiance is. Willful defiance is the original sin. It is the sin that will send all of us straight to hell with jet rockets, is willful defiance. It's the sin that Lucifer committed in the garden, and that's that when God changed his name to Satan. He went from the light that covers to the adversary is what happened. All right, so they've signed the law now, and the ban is going, the law, they say, goes into effect July 1st, 2020. I've just got a note for politicians and other people. If you want to just have a grasp on reality, laws do not go into effect. Laws are in effect. If you're writing something that you say goes into effect July 1st, 2020, it's not a law. It's just some sort of bargain that's been struck by a bunch of people. And it may be good or it may be bad, but it's not a law. So cut it out. Laws are in effect. Laws are discovered. They're not created. But anyway, this agreement to increase willful defiance among public school students in California goes into effect on July 1st, 2020. And Senator Nancy out of Berkeley, she's a Democrat, she wrote the new law. She said it would keep kids in school where they belong. Unquote. There's another quote. She says, SB 419 is one of the best ways to disrupt the school-to-prison pipeline. That's Senator Nancy D. from Berkeley, California. Now, the bill was opposed by the Charter School Development Center. That's what passes for conservatism in California now. And their executive director argued that this is one-size-fits-all legislation. One size fits all. It's big government is what it is. So neither side in the argument on how to raise and educate children, neither side actually knows how to train up a child. Neither side. So whether it's the people against the bill or the people for the bill, they're all very confused. Yet, They are raising the next generation. We care a lot. Thank you, boys. I got to come back, folks. I got to come back because, well, I got so much news, I just don't have a lot of time. And I'm going to just level with you people, all right? So the reason I haven't been around is because I was involved in an unfortunate accident in which I fractured my collarbone. And so I have either been in pain or incommunicado or drugged out of my mind for about 3 weeks. So far today, I have taken no drugs. This is the first day in 3 weeks where I haven't been on either extreme doses of ibuprofen or opioids. That's right, oxycodone, which proves my axiom, by the way, that I brought up just before my unfortunate and rather embarrassing accident that I probably won't go into the details about. But opium is real medicine, okay? And I've been able to experience that. Because I can tell you, I was with an athlete who has broken, I think he said 9 bones in his life when all this happened. And he told me that the collarbone was the worst. He said that was the worst one to break. So congratulations for starting with that one, Doug. If you break any more, it won't be that bad. So breaking your collarbone, by the way, how can I describe it? It's like carrying a sack of broken glass around on your shoulder. And every once in a while, the sack slips off and you reach for it instinctively and you grab it. That's what it's like. Uh-huh. A 40-pound bag of broken glass on my left shoulder. So I'm left-handed, of course, and I unfortunately hurt the left side of my body. And I will say that it has expanded my mind because now instead of instinctively doing everything with my left hand, I have to stop and pause and think and do things with my right hand. And I think it's making me a better person. I think it's making me smarter. So anyway, but opium is real medicine because there was about a week there where the pain was so enormous, definitely the most painful experience of my life. All right, I'll quit whining. Okay, so it wasn't really the broken bone that was so bad. It was the crush injuries to all the tissues surrounding that area from my elbow to the lower, my last rib and my left rib cage. Every fiber of every muscle and tendon and everything was absolutely shredded. It was horrible, horrible. So anyway, I've been so drugged out of my mind that I couldn't do a show responsibly. You can't do a show when you're as drugged up as I was. So I just, you know, they say that discretion is the better part of valor, and a man has to know his limitations. And so I just took that time to recover. And don't worry about me becoming another statistic in the opioid crisis, because I generally don't like opioids, and don't ask me why. They don't agree with me. So I think I'm just fortunate in that, you know, like some people when they're like 13, somebody gives them a cigarette and they hate it for the rest of their life. They're just blessed like that, and that's just the way I am about opium. All right, now speaking of idiots at the wheel. Out in California, again we go to California, a never-ending font of idiocy, always reliable. The legislature out there, have they passed the bill yet? Okay, so a bill was approved both bodies of the legislature have approved this bill to have Uber drivers treated as employees. Right now they're 1099 independent contractors, which gives everybody freedom to do what they want. But they don't want that in California, and I'm not sure why. I think it's just because they're socialist maniacs, and they want control of every aspect of everyone's life. So they approved this bill last Tuesday, and this directly challenges, according to the French press agency, it challenges the business model of the rideshare platforms and others, which depend on workers taking on gigs as independent contractors. The so-called gig economy. That, I mean, I've made my living in the gig economy since before anybody even knew what a gig economy was. Since right around 1999, I've been gigging here and there. And I have had vendors that I worked for who've been very concerned that if I did this or this or this, the government would count me as a regular employee. And they didn't want that because... Anyway, leave it to California to blow up something as innovative as Uber. Okay. And by the way, when we left the restaurant, I was with some millennial sales reps and others. And they said, do you want to Uber home or do you want to ride these cool e-scooters? And I said, look, I vote for Uber, right? If we Uber home, it'll cost all of us $6. If we scooter home, it'll cost each of us $6, plus it's dark, and I don't even know where I am. Anyway, needless to say, I was basically cajoled into getting on one of these scooters, and they go a lot faster than you might think. All right, wait a second. Have we finished with... We finished with Gavin Newsom, and now we go to reason number 1,207, in no particular order, reason number 1,207. Keep or get your children out of the government schools. Out in Oak Park in Illinois. Is it Illinois? I don't know what state this is in. It's Oak Park, which means it could be 37 different states have an Oak Park, I'm sure. But the elementary schools in the Oak Park School District have a new program to target bullying. Bullying, I said. And it is a gender diversity program. A gender diversity program. That's right. And some parents are not happy. The Oak Park schools are going to teach gender identity, gender diversity, starting in kindergarten, right up through fifth grade, is what they're going to do. And some parents are not happy. Eyewitness News, who reports the story, Eyewitness ABC, if that helps you figure out what state this is in. Eyewitness News says that the superintendent would not go on camera. Eyewitness News wanted to interview the superintendent. He said, thank you, but no, I'd rather not do that. So instead, I think they released a statement is what they did. That's what they do when nobody wants to actually stand up in front of a camera and admit that we want to psychologically molest your children starting at the age of five. So they released a statement. The district said, according to the article, we have students who identify as transgender or gender fluid in every one of our schools. Schools may not simply ignore these children for fear of offending someone. Yeah, unquote. Like the normal people. Like the normal couples who actually procreate and have children and then for some reason hand children over to these deviant perverts. I can't comprehend it myself. Now, here's the interesting thing about the Oak Park story here. Is that parents cannot opt out. See, normally in the government schools, in order to trick gullible, moronic parents who feed their kids into the government school system, normally in order to fool them, they give the parents an opt-out option. And then parents opt their child out, and then they feel like as if their child hasn't been psychologically molested. But that doesn't really work. But I don't want to get into that right now. Because on this one, they just flat out said, no, you can't opt out. Your children will submit to gender diversity, and that's it. Otherwise, I guess you'd have to leave. You have to take your kid out of the school. And parents can't do that because... Actually, I don't know why. Actually, they could do that. Why they don't do that, I don't understand. they were asked, why is it that you're not allowing parents to opt out? That seems sort of Machiavellian. Anyway, the Oak Park then released another statement because no one was willing to answer that question directly on camera. And they said, the Oak Park district said this, quote, if the district allows parents to opt out, it could potentially increase the prevalence of gender-related bias, violence, bullying, and harassment, unquote. That's right. The opt-out kids that would be like, I don't know. They would start beating up all the queers, I guess. I can't even comprehend what's going on there. Reason number 1,270, get or keep your children out of the government schools. They will be forced to to be brainwashed with ideas like there are more than one. Did I say more than one? Of course I. Probably still the drugs coursing through my bloodstream. My upper and lower cortex are not quite, they don't quite have it together yet. Anyway, the kids are being told there's more than two genders, okay? And it's gotten so bad that it even confuses normal people sometimes when you're trying to follow this type of story. Meanwhile, over at the BBC, that's the British Broadcasting Corporation, a new BBC Teach film was put out to support the personal, social, and health education, also known as PSHE. Personal, social, and health education is a thing in England. And it's PSHE, P-S-H-E, personal, social, and health education. Well, so this film was put out to support the curriculum around PSHE. And one of the characters in the film asks a teacher, what are the different gender identities? And the teacher replies, that's a really exciting question. Because teachers get excited when they have an opportunity to confuse children about gender, identity, and sex and all that. And I think it's a real creepy. I think it's because a lot of them are genuine, creepy, pervert, porn addict creeps. Yeah, I think that about a lot of public school teachers. I know there are teachers who are not that. I just think that there's a lot of them. So after the teacher gets all excited that the student wants to know about gender identity, the video cuts to a relationship and sex education teacher. They have those in England. And the relationships and sex education teacher says, you know, there are so many gender identities that we know that we have got male and female, but there are over 100, if not more, gender identities now. Over 100, says the BBC, to the children in the government schools there over in England. The article here by The Telegraph goes on to say that Facebook currently lists 71 gender identities. 71. Obviously, Facebook a little behind the curve. They say that doctors in England only recognize 6 genders now. Doctors. These are medical doctors. Male, female, gender-neutral, non-binary. Do I even need to go on? Doctors recognize 6 genders in England. Tell me that the end of Western civilization is not nigh. Try to convince me of that. All right. So let's see. Let's go on here. The relationship and sex education teacher's name is Kate Daniels in the film. And she says, if children find these 100 genders too limiting. Now, it's possible that even though you now have 100 or more, you could find that too limiting. She says, children can just think to themselves, I don't really want to be anything in particular. I am just going to be me. I am just going to be me. You know, what these pervert molesters don't understand is that when you start teaching children at the age of 5 that there's anything besides male or female, by the time they're in 5th grade, they might not even know how to say, I just want to be me. They might not even know who they are anymore by 5th grade. The author of the article, The Telegraph, says, chart the gender diversity madness back to its origins and you'll find that, quote, I am just going to be me is at the root of it all. That's right. I am. Be careful when you declare I am, because that's God's name, and it can be a bit presumptuous for a human, especially when you decide I am going to be something that doesn't exist except in someone's mentally twisted delusion. And I am ends up being, who am I? I'm not sure how that V3 solo comes across on the podcast, but I can tell you, here in the Weekly World Worldview Studios, it sounds awesome. That's right. That's one of the few keyboard solos that are allowed on the broadcast. Now, I did not quite finish with the 100 genders really quick. I wish I'd have written the article of the author's name down, but I did not. But the article closes by the author closes by stating, expressing yourself no longer means appreciating individuality and producing something of wider cultural value, but now expressing yourself means folding in on yourself and behaving in an unashamedly selfish way. Like claiming you're a gender nobody ever heard of, like that. The author says, all of this is likely to leave us with a generation of lost, confused, and angry young adults asking a question we will find it very difficult to answer. How did you let this happen? So I've been asking this for about 20 years. How could you people be allowing this to happen? How could you allow completely abnormal, destructive, deviant behavior become not only the norm, but celebrated as superior? It's like cultural suicide. I can't comprehend it. And the thing is, most people don't want to go along with this. Most people in their heart of hearts, in their gut, they know this is disgusting, sick, destructive, bad. I truly believe most people, but for some reason, everyone's afraid to stand up and say, stop it, you people are insane. Well, and I think it all goes back to the fact that, you know, once you decriminalize this type of behavior, it's... you can't get that toothpaste back in the tube, all right? In fact, listen to this. Here's how insane it's gotten. There's a famous singer named Sam Smith. Have you heard of Sam Smith? He asks, is extremely attractive. So he's a 27-year-old pop star, and he has a hit on the charts that we have never heard of. But this artist has announced that, number one, he announced a few months ago he's non-binary, which means he does not identify. In fact, non-binary, I believe, means you don't even acknowledge that male and female exist. You no longer believe that. So that's what he announced. So then he came out. I'm assuming he's from England because this is from the dailymail.co.uk, which I believe is England. So after announcing his non-binary status, he now comes out and says he prefers to be called they or them. That's the new pronoun that Sam Smith, a famous pop star, has asked to be called by. Okay, and listen to how the Daily Mail reports the article. Sam Smith has broken their silence on coming out. The Stay With Me hitmaker, 27 years old, announced their request in a statement share. Okay. So the Daily Mail goes right along with it. They're going to call this person they, their, them. Further, and so when this Sam Smith eventually commits suicide, the Daily Mail will be a part of that, having entertained his delusion. All right, now speaking of delusion, I want to go to the biggest story of the month, perhaps the biggest story of 2019 so far, and that is professor of computer science from Yale University. Professor of Computer Science from Yale, David Glertner's article, basically Giving Up Darwin. That's the title of the article, Giving Up Darwin. And it's interesting how you can tell that it's painful for this fellow to finally come out. Well, let me just read from the article. He says, I grew up with Darwin's theory and had always believed it was true. I had heard doubts from well-informed, sometimes brilliant people, but I had my hands full of cultivating my garden, and it was easier to let biology take care of itself. But in recent years, reading and discussion have shut that road down for good. He says, this is sad. It's no victory for any sort of religion. It's a defeat for human ingenuity, and it means one less beautiful idea in our world. That's how David Glertner sums up the fact that he must abandon Darwinian evolution. He says, beauty is often a telltale sign of truth. That's interesting that he would think that way. He thinks beauty is important. And as we get through the article, you'll see that it is beauty is part of the reason he had to give up Darwin. And so to call it a beautiful theory after you've given it up, I don't understand that myself, especially if you're a degreed professor. But he goes on to say there's no reason to doubt that Darwin successfully explained the small adjustments by which an organism adapts to local circumstances. True, I agree. But the origin of the species is exactly what Darwin cannot explain. He then goes on to talk about how he read Stephen Meyer's Darwin's Doubt. He talks about two other books, The Deniable Darwin and Other Essays, 2009, David Berlinski, and Debating Darwin's Doubt, an anthology edited by David Klinghoffer that goes over some of the arguments that Stephen Meyer's book, Darwin's Doubt, stirred up. And David Gelertner, professor of computer science at Yale, says that Darwin's Doubt by Stephen Meyer, is one of the most important books in a generation. Few open-minded people will finish it with their faith in Darwin intact. Meyer defends a replacement theory he calls intelligent design. And intelligent design, says Gelertner, it says intelligent design says out loud what anyone who ponders biology must think at some point. Yes, yes, indeed. And he says intelligent design, as Meyer presents it, never uses religious arguments or refers to religion in any way, and that is true. The ID people leave open the door to the aliens, which is why I'm not all that impressed by them, first of all. I mean, I'm impressed that you have a degree in math or biology or physics. That's impressive to me. But the fact that you're only now beginning to notice the intelligent design, anyway, they say it's not about religion. They say religion forces its way into the discussion, although Meyer didn't invite it. He says they talk about how religion presents creation, right? Fundamentalists and all of that. They say this religious view assumes a childishly primitive reading of Scripture. Anyone can see that there are two different creation stories in Genesis, one based on 7 days, the other on the Garden of Eden. I don't know where this guy gets that. There's obviously two creation stories in Genesis. I think maybe you're schizophrenic. I mean, that's much more possible. But let's go on. In general, says Mr. Gelertner, most species enter the evolutionary order fully formed. Yes, the evolutionary order as it's been recorded in the fossil record, allegedly. He says most species enter the evolutionary order fully formed and then depart unchanged. And that's problematic. Now, Darwin had made clear and concrete predictions that we would find these transitional figures, and they haven't been found. So Darwin's clear, concrete predictions have all been falsified so far regarding origins. And Mr. Gelertner is simply admitting it. He's admitting it's true, which is, this is kind of a shocking thing for a lifelong diehard evolutionist to just admit that that Calliope has crashed. That's all. Mr. Gelertner goes on, Darwin's main problem is molecular biology. We now see from inside what we could only see from outside. As if he had developed a theory of mobile phone evolution without knowing that there were computers and software inside. I think that's brilliant. That purely describes. Now, why would Darwin do that? Well, let's not get into that. Let's just finish. He goes on, Darwin's theory is simple to grasp. Its simplicity is the heart of its brilliance and power. And molecular biology made it possible to transform Darwinism into neo-Darwinism. And the engine that powers neo-Darwinian evolution is pure chance and lots of time. But what does generating a new life form entail? Well, many biologists agree that generating a new shape of protein is the essence of it. That's the essence of creating a new species. Proteins are the special ops force of living cells. That's right, except they are common instead of rare. They do all the heavy lifting, all the tricky critical alignments, play a dazzling range of roles. He goes on through how important all these proteins are. He says, is the simple neo-Darwinian mechanism up to the task of creating a new program, a new protein? Are random mutations plus natural selection sufficient to create new protein shapes. Well, how hard is it to build a useful, well-shaped protein? Inventing a new protein means inventing a new gene. Genes spell out the links of a protein chain, amino acid by amino acid. Your task, then, is to invent a new gene by mutation, by accidental change. That's right. Starting with 150 links of gibberish, what are the chances that we can mutate our way to a useful new shape of protein? And this is where the math, this is where the math got him. He says the total count of possible 150 link chains, where each link is chosen separately from 20 amino acids, is 20 to the 150th power. In other words, many. 20 to 150th power roughly equals 10 to the 109th. I'm sorry, 10 to the 195th power. And there are only 10 to the 80th power atoms in the entire universe. I'm sorry, the math simply doesn't work. If all 150 link amino acid sequences in 1 in 10 to the 74th power will be capable of folding into a stable protein, to say your chances are 1 in 10 to the 74th is no difference in practice from saying they are zero. That's right, the math simply doesn't work. Yes, you fail. The odds bury you. It can't be done. And he says there are other problems. Gene mutations simply can't drive macro evolution because to help create a brand new form of organism, a mutation must affect a gene that does its job early and controls the expression of other genes. But mutations to these early acting strategic genes are invariably fatal. Fatal. That's right. He says there are a total of no examples in the literature of mutations that affect early development and the body plan as a whole that are not fatal. So it's not only questionable. It's not only impractical. It's not only dubious. Darwin's key mechanism is 100% fatal. And here's a scientist admitting it. He says the revolution in biological knowledge over the last half century should call for a new understanding of the origin of the species. Intelligent design, maybe. Intelligent, certainly. As long as it suggests nothing more about the designer, he's sure to say that. And he quotes Stephen Meyer, which is pretty good. Our uniform experience of cause and effect shows that intelligent design is the only known cause of the origin of large amounts of functionally specified digital information. Then it goes through how we all run on digital information. Well, and then he closes, does David Glertner, professor of computer science at Yale University. He closes with, how cleanly and quickly can the field of biology get over Darwin and move on? Well, it's one of the most important questions facing science in the 21st century. Indeed, I find it rather amusing that the prediction of that old Bible thumper through the Bible with J. Vernon McGee predicted that within a century, Darwinian evolution would collapse as a theory. And here we are, about 50 or 60 years on from that. And J. Vernon McGee, he was always in the right place. While Darwin was bamboozling these bozos at the college, J. Vernon and the rest of us normal people, logical, reasonable, rational people, were going where everyone else is going to need to go to get the answer to one of these most important questions facing science in the 21st century. And that is back through the Bible. Worldview, and we're back. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It's good to have you. I know I went probably too far with that last article, but I cannot contain my excitement that secular university professors are no longer afraid to stand up and say what Mr. Gelertner said, and I think it is a paradigm-shifting, a watershed moment, I should say. A watershed moment, yes. Meanwhile, another watershed moment, NASA has investigated the very first allegation of a crime committed in space. That's right, criminal activity in space. And does it involve the Russians? No, it does not. As a matter of fact, it involves decorated astronaut and U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Annie McLean. That's right, Annie has been accused of improperly gaining access to her spouse's online bank account using NASA computers. That's right. She was spying on her spouse. That's right. Her spouse, by the way, is a girl. So decorated astronaut, Army Lieutenant Colonel Ann McLean is married or was married to another girl named Summer. And she started spying on her bank account she was trying to get dirt somehow to obtain custody of her spouse's son. Yeah. This is just wrong on so many levels. I can't go on. McLean and Warden married in 2014. Now they absolutely hate each other. Wrong on so many levels. Who would have guessed that the first crime committed in space would somehow involve sexual immorality? What were the odds of that? Meanwhile, speaking of all that, let's go to Ilhan Omar. I'm sorry, did I say Ilhan? I meant Ilham Omar, I-L-H-A-M, Ilham Omar. Dr. Beth Minot is a Washington, D.C. mom, right? And she says her cheating spouse, Tim, told her back in April that he was having an affair with Ilhan Omar, the Somali-born U.S. terrorist. I'm sorry, representative in Congress. And that Tim even made the shocking declaration that he was in love with the Somali-born Islamic slut. He was in love with the Minnesota congresswoman. And that he wanted to part ways with his wife and the mother of his children. To chase after, So Dr. Beth Minot, by the way, is an actual physician. She doesn't just have a PhD. She's actually a doctor. Her 38-year-old husband is going after Ilham. And what's really sad here is that the physician and her 38-year-old creep husband have a 13-year-old son together, whose life has been destroyed effectively as of right now. I mean, it'll be up to him and the people in his immediate circle how much of his life they can try to put back together. But as of right now, it's shattered and destroyed. And for that, this 38-year-old husband should feel the eternal condemnation of every person directed toward him with vitriol, hatred, and disgust unless he repents. That's all. The Minots, well, what are you going to say? I don't even care. So the two with a 13-year-old son, they lived together for 6 years before they married in 2012. So just another reminder to you young people. If you think moving in with your girlfriend or boyfriend is going to make it more likely that you succeed, the statistics are against you, number one. And number two, it's just wrong. So don't do it. All right. Does anybody remember Mark Foley? Crickets. Mark Foley was a very successful Florida congressman and a Republican until he resigned in disgrace for, let's just say, messages with teenage boys. We'll just leave it at that. He exchanged messages with teenage boys that back in 2006 were embarrassing. These days, I'm not so sure. And why am I not so sure? Well, because according to the Sun Sentinel down there in South Florida, Mark Foley, creepy pervert who texted teenage boys dirty words. He's enjoying a political renaissance among South Florida Republicans who admire his political skills and his support for Donald Trump. That's right. Anyway, most of you probably don't remember Mark Foley's resignation. Most people who are still Republicans don't remember it because they've chosen to forget. They just don't want to know. It's willful defiance. After Foley's resignation, we are reminded by the Sun Sentinel, he went into rehab for alcohol addiction and disclosed that he'd been the victim of childhood sexual abuse by a priest, and of course, that he's a homosexual now. He came out as gay, I should say. all right. Anyway, Foley was speaking at Lobster Fest down in somewhere there in South Florida. He praised Border Patrol agents, law enforcement officers, military service members. That's right. Mark Foley, here's what he said from the dais, ladies and gentlemen, at Lobster Fest in front of God and everybody. Mark Foley, creepy homo pervert who texted teenage boys, said, quote, "What has happened to our society? What has happened to our values? We must awaken the spirit of our democracy. We all have to participate in restoring the moral order of this nation." Said Mark Foley, who texted, okay. All right. My, the times, they are changing. So nobody has any shame anymore. Mark Foley should still be hiding somewhere and hoping never to be seen again. But instead, he's up on the dais calling for the moral order of this nation. All right. And you know who's mostly responsible for this despicable state of affairs? Are the preachers and the politicians who have forced us to tolerate child molesters. So the one thing I believe about Mark Foley is that he was a victim of childhood sexual abuse. Why do I believe that? Because that's why most homosexual men are homosexuals, is because they were molested as children or as teenagers. That's why most of them are that way. And so the fact that we have decided that we will tolerate those types of people in our midst is mostly to blame for Mark Foley. Mark Foley's mostly to blame for Mark Foley, but the guy who molested him and the judges and the preachers and the politicians and the lawyers who have forced us to tolerate people who would do that to other people and not execute them with extreme prejudice are at fault and will be repaid in spades in this life or in the next. All of you, whoever it was that decided we were going to tolerate child molesters, you're going to be hellfire and damnation will be visited upon you for all of eternity, and it's the right thing to do. Meanwhile, in Poland, Stalwola Wola Poland, the president over there, or is he the prime minister? His name is Kaczynski. What's his first name here? Help me out. Help me. He's the leader of the ruling party, and they don't give his first name, and I don't know why. But the thing is he's standing up against the gay pride parades over there. Ah, there's his name. Jarosław Kaczynski. There he is. He's the president, or the leader. He says, quote, "It's hard, offensive, this traveling theater." He's talking about homos marching down the street. "This traveling theater that is showing up in different cities to provoke and then cry, we are the ones who are harmed by this. It must be unmasked and discarded." That's the gay pride parades. Unmasked and discarded, says Jarosław Kaczynski over there in Poland. He says the law against homos marching in the street must be fully enforced. He also said Poland was under siege from a rainbow plague, who he compared to Poland's former communist rulers. All right, well, that's something. At least he's standing up and saying something. But nowhere does he say this should be illegal, which is really the only way to solve that. Meanwhile, you got Drew Brees. Drew Brees recorded a video for National Bring Your Bible to School Day. National Bamboozle the Evangelicals Day. Have your child bring their Bible to school. Everything's okay. Anyway, the liberals are freaking out and they're mad at him. They say he did a video for an anti-LGBTQI group. That group was Focus on the Family. Focus on the Family made a video encouraging children to participate in National Bring Your Bible to School Day. And Drew Brees got on there and said, "I want to encourage you to live out your faith and bring your Bible to school. Grab that Bible and run over there to the Temple of Baal where your parents drop you off every morning." start preaching to all them in the Temple of Baal there. So anyway, so the leftists freak out, and they say Drew Brees is anti-LGBTQI. And Drew has to post on Twitter. He says, hopefully this sets the record straight with who I am and what I stand for. Love, respect, and accept for all. A-L-L, all caps. I encourage you not to believe the negativity you read that says differently. It's simply not true. Have a great day. So Drew Brees put a whole lot of words on here, but he didn't say anything. He stands for love and respect and accept all. It sounds to me that's a pro-LGBTQI statement that he made. If it and it has to be interpreted, because he couldn't just come out and say whether he's for or against people sodomizing each other and then publicly bragging about it. Which I think we should all be able to agree that that's not good. And if we can't all agree, those of you who disagree with me are incorrect. All right. Now we've got, do I want to do this? Okay, here we go, folks. We've got the United States government. Now, this is according to the Daily Star, which is a tabloid over in England. The U.S. government is likely aware of snake-like UFOs. Snake-like! Yes, they've been spotted all across the country, and they're monitoring them. The government's monitoring these snake-like UFOs. This is according to a former police detective. So that's the first paragraph, right? So it's a former police detective, so we should take what he has to say seriously. I mean, after all, he's a former police detective. The detective is Detective Constable Gary Hazeltine. And he says that he, let's see here, how does he describe himself? he describes himself as a UFO hunter. Yep. Okay. So Gary, well, he used to be a detective there, right? But he claims the U.S. military and the government have controlled the UFO field worldwide since the 1940s. That's right. There's no doubt in my mind, he says, that a small portion of UFO reports involve extraterrestrials. That's right. Gary runs the police reporting UFO sightings database. And he's pretty much a crackpot. And he got published, though. So here's the thing. There's an article like this published in some form of media on a daily basis. And it's all designed to just slowly build into the minds of the young people that everybody knows there's aliens. We all know there. Haven't we all agreed that there's aliens? Because Darwinism is about to collapse. I mean, we saw it collapse, at least in the computer science department at Yale, at least in one little part of it. We saw the cracks in the edifice beginning. And so the effort to prepare the minds of the children for the aliens was started some decades ago, and it's going, and it continues to go, and it continues to go, not unlike the sands through the hourglass. So go the days of our lives. All right. Now, meanwhile, from the Domestic Tranquility File, a California man who rapped about burying his girlfriend just hours after she had disappeared has been charged with her murder. That's right. Rapper Robert Camus. Charged with capital murder after slaying his girlfriend, allegedly, Amanda. Let's see. Camus committed the crime while he was out on bail for other crimes that he probably should have been put to death for. They say Camus either faces the death penalty or life. Okay. I guess that pretty much covers it. Oh, life without the possibility of parole. And we all know what that means, right? If you watch Forensic Files, life without the possibility of parole means you'll probably get out someday. So that's what he faces for not only killing his girlfriend, but then rapping about it. That's right. He raps about it. All right. Let's see. Do I have anything I want? Anything else that's of any? That one's too gross. I don't know. I may be out of material, folks. Okay, let's end on a positive note, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if any of you have ever worked construction, but I have, and it's hard work. It's hard work, and people die every year. It's brutal. It literally grinds the life out of a man, hard labor. Grinds the life out of a man. Well, over in Switzerland, researchers are working with robots. They've just finished a proof-of-concept experiment in which a digitally fabricated house is now the first habitable building designed and planned using a choreography of digital fabrication methods, including robots and 3D printing. That's right, they built a house. The robots built a house with 3D printers and other such technologies. 3D printed ceilings, beams assembled by robots on site. And hey, the house needed 60% less cement than houses built by regular normal people with skin on. And the new digitally fabricated house has passed the stringent Swiss building safety codes. So the day could be nigh, ladies and gentlemen, when we no longer have to hammer and nail and concrete and mud and drywall and all of that stuff to build our house. We'll have the robots do it. But then after that, we have to maintain the house, so we'll still have stuff to do. And we'll be able to do other stuff while we're not building houses. Like, I don't know, maybe go to Mars or something cool like that. So don't be afraid of the robots. The robots are our friends. And artificial intelligence will drive the next generation of technology that will be good for humanity. Of course, it could fall into the wrong hands and be used for evil. But overall, it's going to be a fun ride, and I hope to be along for it with all of you for quite some time. That's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and Real Science Radio, AmericanRideToLife.com, and of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.